Hey everybody, Raul here for Bass Musician Magazine, and today we have the extraordinary honor and pleasure of chatting with bassist, composer, producer, and an endless list of so many things, Mr. Russell Blake. Yay!
Oh, thank you. Great to be here.
My pleasure, Russell, my pleasure. Well, as I mentioned, there's just so much that we can talk about, but as always, we like to delve into the past and go to the beginning. How did you get started in music, and particularly on bass?
12 years old, my birthday. I was hoping my dad would come home from work with a football, basketball. He came home with a $40 electric bass and said that he was following through with his vision that both of his sons were going to play the bass. My dad is also a professional musician, So he played trumpet and trombone. But he says he had a vision that both of his sons were going to play the bass, so he followed through with it. And he came home with his $40 electric bass. And I was not amused. That's 12 years old. So when he went to work the next day, I took that $40 bass and put it in the trash can outside.
Because
I was going to show him who I was. He came home from work, took it out of the trash can, was going to show me who he was. And had me on that instrument every day, 4 hours a day, teaching me how to read, teaching me all the fundamentals. And in 3 months' time, I began working as a professional.
Wow.
Yeah, 3 months' time. Oh, I forgot to add the $40 electric bass. He told me I was going to pay for it in installments.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
It was garnished for my allowance. But in 3 months' time, in September of that year, I began working as a professional. So, yeah, this May makes 50 years.
Wow. With his tutelage, but otherwise on the bass itself, you're pretty much kind of self-taught?
No, not necessarily. I would have to say without his fundamental discipline and training, teaching me how to read, first and foremost, because he wanted to make sure that I could do this as an occupation. Taught me how to read, and he not only utilized bass books, the best bass books, Bob Haggart, Simandl, Ray Brown, but he also taught me using trombone books and cello books. Because his theory was it would give me a different approach to the fingerboard since it was the same clef. So he taught me using cello books, Bach cello books, and trombone books. So it gave me a different approach to the instrument, as well as really honed my sight reading, my first sight reading. And he trained me to play any type of genre of music. He said it didn't matter, as if you can read, then that way you will always work.
Yes.
So whether it was Chinese or Haitian music or Martian music, he gave me a gift that will enable me to work for the rest of my life as a professional musician.
Very nice. And then this early gig with you being like a 12-year-old, what kind of gig was that?
The very first gig I did, September of 1973. My dad, being in New York City, He was an in-demand trombonist. And there's like, you know, a musician's community in every city, of course. And in New York, he got the call. They were looking for a bass player. And they knew that my older brother played bass as well, Alex Blake. But Alex was not in town, and they were looking for a bass player. My dad said, I know a bass player that can do the gig, he reads first sight, yada, yada, yada. He brought me down to the gig. It was a major hotel in New York at the time. It was the Roosevelt Hotel. It was a Panamanian dance. And they had about 1,000 people in the audience. And it was a big band, 15 to 16 pieces.
Wow.
Big band. And my dad and I walk in. My dad is pushing the B-15 amplifier, Ampeg. And I'm carrying, at that time, after the $40 bass, we went to Sam Ash in New York. And I had evolved to a Fender Precision.
Oh, nice.
$325. So the bass is taller than me. I'm 12 years old. The bass is taller than me. So he comes in pushing the Ampeg B-15, and I'm carrying the bass. And they all assumed he was the bass player. Because a lot of the cats didn't know him. You know, they were all... So as soon as he sets up the amp, I sit down, start warming up and everything. And these guys start looking over. Who's that kid? What's this kid doing on stage playing? And my father's like, look, don't worry about it. Just put the music in front of them. Count off the time. Everything's going to be okay. A couple of the guys were incensed. I'm a professional. I'm not going to play on stage with some kid. My father's like, just put the music in front of them. Count off the time. And everything will be okay. They continued to rebel. My father got very upset. You think that you guys know me? You think I'm going to bring somebody here that's going to embarrass me? Anyway, they couldn't do anything else. I'm there on the set. Couldn't get any other bass player. So next thing you know, they put the music in front of me. They counted off the time. It was wonderful. I had a great experience because nothing that they put in front of me was anything that was too challenging. Mm. So part of the story was before the gig, I had about 15 enemies. After the gig, I had 15 lifelong friends because they were just amazed. And to me, it was nothing amazing. I was just doing what I was taught.
Sure.
Yeah, just reading, you know. So it was salsa music, merengue, guaguancó, cumbia, mantuno. We played the gamut. And it's a memory that's just etched.
Nice, nice. Well, and one of the particularities with that particular music, is that the kind of stuff you listen to at home as well?
Yeah, well, it's ingrained in my blood as far as my Panamanian culture.
Mm-hmm.
Latin is ingrained in the blood. But the beauty about it is that growing up, not only was Latin music prevalent in my home, but also all forms of music. My mother was an organist, my dad was a musician, so I heard everything from classical, opera, jazz, Brazilian, Latin jazz, country music, the whole gamut, you know, because they were explorers, my parents, explorers of music.
Nice.
So I heard it all growing up. And that first gig, as a matter of fact, I made $50, which is big money for me at 12 years old.
Oh, man. There you go. Well, and the reason I ask particularly is especially with a lot of the Latin music, I find that people that have not been immersed in it, a lot of times it's difficult to catch like the syncopated nature of it, you know, because you've got, especially like when you look at a lot of the European music, it's a lot of it's very strict 4-4-4 kind of march. Here it's on the dot and all that. But with the salsa and the guaguancó and all these things, you know, you're kind of leading in with this syncopated motion that's got its own cadence and rhythm to it.
Latin music has its roots in African music. It's from Africa.
Absolutely.
Generally. So in African music, it's polyrhythmic.
Mm-hmm.
And each instrument has its assignment. It's syncopated. So the bass has its assignment. Drums, congas, timbales, maracas, everything all the way down to the clave. And the clave is the heart of it.
Yeah.
That's the heart of it right there. So you have to know your assignment and be able to fit in comfortably because one syncopated note, no matter what instrument you're playing, out of place can throw the whole engine out of whack, can throw the train off the tracks, so to speak. So I would say anybody that's having a challenge with Latin music, sit down with it, listen to it, play it slowly.
Mm.
Can't play it slow. If you can't play it slow, my dad used to always tell me, if you can't play it slow, you can't play it fast. So sit down, learn your assignment.
Yeah.
Play it slowly. You know what I mean? If you're a bass player, play against the song. Play along with the bass player.
Mm-hmm.
Most importantly, count.
Yeah.
You gotta count because that's your center. That's your drummer right there. You know, that's your metronome.
Mm-hmm.
So you count. But yeah, man, the syncopations. I've seen many a guy be thrown off.
And big time.
He's the greatest musicians. I've seen some of the, I don't want to name names, but I've seen some of the greatest musicians in situations where they could not play Latin music and they were humiliated. They were humiliated.
Yeah. You know?
So I would say learn it and learn all forms of music, regardless to what the genre is, because it's only going to make you a better bass player.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to evolve you and refine who you are, not to mention open up the door for that type of music for another stream of income.
Mm-hmm.
Don't limit yourself, you know?
There you go. Well, and it's one of the, also, because of your location, being in New York City is a crucible of multiple cultures and things, so you could get exposure from other kinds of music. For the longest time, people were, I'm going to say, limited by what the labels were promoting. And so with my own experience, when I left the country, I was all of a sudden exposed to a ton of music that I'm going, where was all this? where did this come about? And they're like, no, this has been going on for a long time. This isn't anything new. It's just new to you because you were hearing what they kept on kind of force feeding. And, you know, there was labels and radio stations and it was getting, you know, and that's why you'd hear the same song 10 times. You know, but it wasn't, you were missing that variety. So that was very fortunate to be in New York and exposed to that.
Yeah, because as you just brought up, I think one of the worst things that can impact a musician is categorization. Mm. And that is what has happened here in the West too often because of radios and everything else. But we have categorized music to the point where it's imprinted upon a musician. Well, I'm going to be a country Western player and that's all I'm going to do. Yeah. I'm going to be a jazz player, and that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to be an R&B player, and that's all I'm going to do. And that limitation, unfortunately, can hinder you in so many ways. As a musician, you have to look at the root word, music. Mm-hmm. The root word means all music. With all the genres of music on the planet, and they say there's over 200, it only boils down to two types. It's either good or bad.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line, man. So always open yourself up to all forms of music. You will not limit yourself, but you will only grow and evolve from it. Not to mention, open yourself up, once again, to more streams of income.
Totally.
The word gets out. Oh, man, yeah, he can play reggae.
Yeah.
And he can also play rock. He can play blues, but he can also play classical.
Mm-hmm.
Once everybody knows that you are democratic in that fashion and that you can play all forms of music, hey, the money is coming in. If you're a professional.
Yes.
It's coming in from multiple sources.
I gotcha. Well, and it is interesting because so many people that I speak to, the journey is different for each one. And in some instances, they have had the benefit of an enriched surrounding of different musics and things. And then sometimes, interestingly enough, they might have stepped into a lane that has just been a constant thing for the longest time. Right. And, you know, there's no wrong way with it. But I agree with you entirely that the more tools you have in your tool belt, the better prepared, and you're least likely to say, well, no, I don't do that. Now, because of the early influences from your father being, you know, not being a bassist, do you have a particular, looking at bassists outside, do you have any influences or anybody that you go, this is somebody that I really like that I've patterned some of what I do after?
My main influence has been my brother, Alex Blaine.
Okay.
Alex has, it's phenomenal. He's 10 years older than me, but his resume, he's played with everyone from Nancy Wilson to Dizzy Gillespie to the only person Alex hasn't played with is Miles.
Wow.
You see, his resume is incredible. Billy Cobham, Tony Bennett, I mean, I can go on and on. But the reason Alex is such a heavy influence is not merely because he's my blood, but because he has staked out a unique form of playing. And he was out during the same time as Stanley Clark. He's from that generation.
Mm-hmm.
And Stanley Clark, Alfonso Johnson, Jonathan Pistorius. But Alex is unique in his approach to the instrument. Not just electric, but his forte is the upright.
Oh, wow.
I would really strongly recommend all of your, everybody under the sound of my voice, so please check out Alex Blaine. YouTube is the best way for you to see. And this way you can see the influence of the impact that he had on me. Besides Alex, of course, are all the great jazz players, Paul Chambers and Henry Grimes, and et cetera, et cetera. Not to mention a great number of classical players. Anyone who is doing anything unique, for me, is what influences me, especially to think outside of the box, to make no limitation your limitation. Bruce Lee was a great influence on me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Jimi Hendrix. It doesn't just have to be bass.
Sure.
Or philosophers, you know? So anyone that has gone above and beyond their abilities on whatever it is they do, I would recommend a bassist. I'm sorry about that.
No worries.
A bassist to check out and to think about how that individual took what they have and expanded it. Because I believe in the proverb, once you expand the mind, it never goes back to its original dimensions.
Very, very wise words, my friend. And kind of circling back too, because again, there's so much, but I know you've been working on a solo bass project among the many things, but the name always kind of caught my attention, 4 strings and 10 fingers.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about this solo pattern. You're on volume 3, maybe more, but at least I've seen volumes 2 and 3. So tell us a little bit about that.
I developed a technique on a 4-string electric bass, which I call the melodious chordal technique. It's a philosophy that simply states the 4-string electric bass is not unlike the piano or 6-string guitar in terms of melody, chordal accompaniment, and rhythmic accompaniment performed simultaneously. Currently have about 472 pieces in my repertoire, encompassing classical, Spanish classical, Caribbean, opera, jazz, Latin, Broadway, and pop musical idioms. And it's not, somebody would say, well, you know what, there's a lot of cats that are playing, you know, the melody and the chords on the bass today, and that's exactly true, as it should be. It should be an evolution. The difference with me is, number one, I'm not playing original music, because anybody can play their originals on the bass.
Sure.
I'm performing works by Tchaikovsky, Mozart, Rachmaninoff, Beethoven, Stevie Wonder, Duke Ellington, all of the great composers of our time. I'm reproducing those musics on the bass, on the 4-string electric bass. Not for my own ego, but to simply show the capabilities of the instrument.
What gotcha.
The instrument is capable of. So I said, let me document this, right? So that's when I decided to go into the studio and record what I call 10 fingers and 4-string solo series. So I currently have 3 volumes. It's about 35 or 40 songs in total. And so I urge any and all bass players to please check it out, only because to give the inspiration that your instrument is not merely a dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum conventional instrument.
Sure.
But it has the same capabilities as the piano, the 6-string guitar, or the violin in terms of being a solo instrument capable of reproducing the world's greatest music by the world's greatest composers.
Nice. Well, and I think it's important to point out, too, that this is all simultaneously at once. So you're not using pedals, you're not looping, you're not doing any of the technological things that allow somebody to act like they've got multiple musicians.
Thank you so much for that disclaimer. I always forget to do that. In these recordings, there are no special effects and no overdubs. 4 strings, 10 fingers, that's it.
There you go.
No special effects, no overdubs. Yeah.
I see. And of course, since we're talking about strings and fingers, we need to talk about your sound and how you get it. Of course, it always starts with hands and fingers. Everybody always says, oh, yep, that's how I get my sound. But there's a bass that I've been eyeballing off to your side there alongside the Yamaha that I recognize. But tell us a little bit about your instruments and how you're getting your sound.
All right. This instrument was made for me in 1994 by the great luthier named Abe Rivera. Abe has transitioned from us about 3 years ago, but he made this instrument for me. He saw me perform in New York, and he normally takes him about a year to make an instrument like this. And I told him that I was getting ready to go on tour with Sonny Rollins, and Abe put everybody aside and said, my boy, I've got to get one of my instruments in your hands. Yeah. So he put everybody aside, and he made this in about 6 weeks. He worked tirelessly, 24/7, made it in about 6 weeks' time. If it was a 6 weeks, maybe about a month, 3 months. Yeah, it was a short period of time, probably about six weeks to 2 months, that he made this instrument for me. Because I told him I was getting ready to go to a tour, and it would be great if I could bring one of his instruments with me. So this is made from 5 different woods. It's bird's eye maple, rosewood fingerboard, pearl inlays. Here we have mahogany running around the sides. In the back, we have wenge. Right, running all straight through.
Neck through.
Curly maple.
Yeah.
Abe's signature, I don't know if you could see that heart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's his signature on every instrument that he does. And then he's got gold inlays here for my name. I don't know if you can see that.
I can. Nice.
Yeah, gold inlaid there. And I'm just very fortunate to be one of his endorsees. Kevin Eubanks from The Tonight Show, Pat Martino, Jaco Pastorius, myself, and there's another gentleman from the Yellow Jackets. His name slips my mind. But I was very fortunate to be one of Abe's endorsees. At the time of his transition, he was making another bass for me to just perform the classical repertoire that I have. And unfortunately, it wasn't finished because, you know, he transitioned on.
Yeah.
So this instrument, since 1994, yeah, has traveled the world with me. About 75 countries. It's gone all over the world with me. And as far as sound is concerned, the only thing I can say as far as my sound is through studying. I had made a vow unto myself that I was going to study 70 hours a week, 10 hours a day, 3 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon, 3 in the evening. And that is what shaped my particular sound, just the studying.
Very cool. Do you have a particular preference in strings?
I have endorsed several string companies, and I like the round rounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, round rounds. That's my preference, right? The round
nice. Rounds. Yeah. Very nice, very nice. And amplification-wise, I see some Mark bass behind you, but there's a pyramid of gear, so do you have anything particular that you like?
Not necessarily. No, there's not anything in particular. I'm really hoping that I can get an amplification company that would be interested in me. The last one I endorsed was Yorko.
Okay.
That was some years ago, though. My thing is just if I can just get an organic sound, a good, clean, organic sound, because there are so many great amplifiers out there.
Yeah.
But I've been just so focused on performance, development, evolution. It hasn't really been. I know a lot of guys just focus on the gear. And of course, that's important to each individual. But for me, as long as I can get a clean, organic sound, then I'll let the fingers and the spirit do the rest.
Very nice. Very nice. In addition to being a musician, you are, I'd be remiss if we didn't look at part of the rest of the spectrum, because you've been involved with domestic violence awareness. You've worked on so many other causes and important issues in life. So, and part of the reason I bring this up is that you mentioned so much time dedicated to your instrument and the music and the craft, but you haven't just holed up inside of a shell and not been involved in anything else. Tell us a little bit about your other projects and things that you do.
Well, there's a multitude of endeavors, and I'm always sort of reinventing myself. I believe that when that time, we're all on a spiritual journey, and when that time of transition comes, we need to return to our Creator. We need to return to God as an empty vessel, because all of us are born with a multitude of anointing, a multitude of gifts, and then we're not here for each other. We're here to serve. So domestic violence has been one of the causes of which I have given of myself. I'm also a published author, and I authored a book entitled Real Men Don't Hit Women, 12 Principles of Effective Change Against Intimate Partner Violence. Nice. And it lays out principles that I believe would be crucial to any man that is struggling with anger management and domestic violence issues. This book was formulated as a result of all my travels, because I went to different women's shelters all over the world.
Wow.
Oman, Dubai, it was while I was on tour. During my off days, I would take the time, and throughout Asia, Vietnam, et cetera, et cetera. And I would learn from different cultures how domestic violence was impacting their culture. Australia as well. I'm also a certified personal trainer, because I believe fitness, we have to take care of the temple in order to be strong enough to produce the music that is coming through us. So I have about 6 different certifications in the fitness industry right now. I'm also a certified computer network engineer. It allows me to really focus some other energy into creating,
sure,
you know, networks, etc. I'm also an ordained minister as well. That helps me in terms of my spiritual journey. So I've authored a book that I call Proverbs 31, The Virtuous Black Woman, and it's part of the Proverbs 31 series of books to uplift the women in our lives, to support them, to cherish them, to love them. So that's just some of the other events that I'm involved in outside of the base.
Very neat, very neat. And looking ahead, because again, you've got so much happening, are there any particular plans for the future? What are we looking forward to?
Well, I'm very fortunate at this time to have my music. I'm most successful in what they call the smooth jazz genre.
Okay.
So my music right now, there's about 8 tracks playing on 11 stations in 3 different countries. And I'm so very grateful to have that type of exposure for my music. I'm continuing to produce music for that, not only that genre, but also I'm producing a documentary right now on the Civil War. So I'm creating music for that right now, Civil War music, original music for that as well. Hmm. And I'm also creating jingles because I've had several companies interested in my music, so my music is going to jingles as well. And the reason for this transition, musically speaking, is because after 50 years of playing, it's catching up to my hands.
Hmm.
So myself, like a lot of other bass players with that type of road time, osteoarthritis in the thumbs.
Yeah.
So it's very challenging to play at the same level that I used to play at, because now it's bone rubbing against bone, the cartilage is gone, and it's kind of tough. But at the same time, I'm still a musician. So I still can produce music, and I still teach.
Nice.
Because I've had the wonderful blessing of teaching as an adjunct professor at about 5 universities here in the States, and I've also taught around the world as a goodwill ambassador for the State Department. So we can't keep it unless we give it away.
Mm.
And it's so very important for us as seasoned and veteran bass players to take other bass players of the younger generation, take them under our wing, and share with them the knowledge that we have nurtured over these decades. Because a lot of them have all the gear, they've got a lot of technique, but there is a lack of wisdom there that only a seasoned and a veteran bassist can give to them. You know what I mean? So, again, just part of all of what I'm doing.
Very nice. And with so much of this, I'm sure people are going, how can I find out more? Where's the best place for people to look if they want to know what you've got going on?
Well, I want them to go to my YouTube page. They can just type in Russell with 1L, Russell Blake Bass, and my YouTube channel will come up. And my new website is getting ready to launch in 3 days from now. So that will be Russell Blake, Russell with 1L, .info. And there, everything that I'm doing will come up.
Nice, nice. And you're active on social media as well, at Russell Blake Music?
Yes, that's my Instagram. And Russell Blake on Facebook as well.
Very.
Russell Blake Music, at Russell Blake Music, yeah. You know the jargon, man. I don't even know the jargon. You know the jargon.
It's the pool I swim in every day, man. What can I say? But anyway, Russell, we appreciate you taking time from such a busy schedule with all the stuff that you do, sharing your journey with us and these nuggets of wisdom. I'm sure and I hope that young bassists will take them to heart and go, here's something that I can really, you know, I hadn't thought of, but I can really use. So again, thank you for all that. Folks, you've seen him here, Russell Blake on Bass Musician Magazine.
Thank you so much, friend. Take care.